Today, we are going to be chatting about beauty through a slightly different lens. There is a huge link between personal wellness, beauty, and sustainability. In this episode, we'll explore how consumers are making wellness a top priority, aiming to enhance both their physical and mental well-being.
There's amazing skincare available. We are taught from day one, you need to use a skincare routine, you need to use SPF, and all of that still holds true. But sometimes there's a piece of the puzzle that plays a role as well. For example, stress. For example, what you're eating.
Paraffin wax is one wax that often comes up in conversation as sort of a bad wax, and that you want to avoid paraffin wax as it's derived from petroleum fuel or sometimes coal. So it's essentially like, I like to describe it as having a small car engine in your living room or your bathroom, wherever you're burning your candles.
We'll also discuss how brands can play a pivotal role in guiding consumers into a new chapter of self-care. If you listen back to a couple of previous episodes, there's a really special live one where I discuss this topic at length with Shakayla Forbes-Bell, fashion psychologist and author, Chloe Pierre, founder of Thyself, and Lydia Bolton, who is a designer and creator. And as we navigate these complexities, especially of the modern society that we all live in, it's really crucial to recognise that kind of symbiosis between individual well-being and the health of our planet. And this connection goes beyond coincidence, and it reflects the intricate tapestry that binds our personal health to the sustainability of the environment that we inhabit. Wellness is not just about what we consume, but also how much. These principles of mindfulness can be applied to consumption patterns, promoting essentially a more sustainable lifestyle. Being mindful about our choices, whether it's in terms of food, clothing, or other products, can lead to reduced waste and a much lighter ecological footprint on the whole. And a big cornerstone of personal wellness is nutrition. And one of today's guests is Dr. Tivi Maratapu, who will go into this in greater detail later. Research shows that a diet that's rich in plant-based foods not only promotes individual health, but can also lower environmental footprints. A shift towards sustainable and plant-centric diets can mitigate the environmental impact of agriculture, addressing the issues such as deforestation and greenhouse gas emissions. Our environment plays a huge factor. Stress, as I'm sure we all know, can really negatively impact your personal wellness. And trying to fit so much into such a busy schedule as the society that we are, especially, can prove really difficult at times. Regular physical activity is essential for our well-being, and it really does turn out that green spaces are a vital role in that, in reducing your stress. And access to parks and natural environments encourages people to be more active, in obviously not in a rainy UK climate necessarily, but in other warmer places, definitely. But it also contributes to your mental well-being. The preservation of these spaces is so important, and it's important not just for our health, but environmental sustainability as well. So I want to talk a little bit about the importance of connection. So recognizing the connection between personal wellness and sustainability emphasizes that our individual choices really matter, and they reverberate globally. The choices that I make as a person in London can impact the choices of somebody living in the USA, for example. It's that kind of butterfly effect. So from the food that we eat to the products that we buy, every single decision really contributes to either the degradation or the preservation of our planet. We need to be a little bit more resilient as well, thinking about this. And a sustainable planet is a foundation for long-term human well-being. The depletion of all of our natural resources, as we're seeing across the world, and the degradation of our ecosystems further just jeopardizes the resilience of our environment and our mere existence. And it makes it more crucial for us to really think about the sustainability for future generations. It's sort of an intricate dance when you're talking about the connection between personal wellness and global sustainability. And each step that we take has really profound implications. Embracing essentially a more holistic perspective with regards to our well-being, with the health of our planet, kind of offers a roadmap for that resilient future that we so desperately need. And we're all striving to be a bit healthier and cutting out meat and not driving as much and think about what we buy and thinking about the sustainability of our earth. And by doing that, it recognizes that the two aren't just connected, but are in fact inseparable. The next chapter of wellness, in my opinion, will be mind-body beauty, where mental well-being and physical appearance are interconnected. And this new chapter involves embracing stress relief techniques, healing practices, targeted supplements, and really revamped daily routines. And we're seeing it across social media with so many people posting their daily routine in a more slow and holistic fashion. And I think that it's really necessary to help elevate the concept of beauty to a higher level in the wellness space as well. And our first guest today, I kind of want to talk about this because it's something that they're products that I use and I love and I buy regularly. But I want to talk to Danielle Stigwood, who's the founder of Brilla Candles. Now, candles, you may be thinking, how do candles factor in with the beauty space and self-care? But it's not just all about what you're putting on your body. It's what you're doing in your environment to reduce stress and to enable a slower, more holistic way of approaching life. So let's talk to Danielle. Something that I'm thinking about more and more as I continue with my journey with sustainability. And I'm seeing it popping up more where we're seeing wellness-infused beauty products, we're seeing self-care being pushed as part of sustainability because it is all a part of that. And when we think about things like eco-anxiety, you've got to do things to bring yourself back to center. And I think taking a moment and thinking about your lifestyle is so important. That's why I wanted to have you here, because not only are your candles made in a better way, you're a smaller business and you're also a Black-owned business, which I love and I want to champion. So let's talk a little bit about beauty. Beauty is really evolving to include wellness practices. So from your kind of personal opinion and your perspective, how do you see this integration shaping the beauty industry? And what role do candles play in creating a holistic wellness experience?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Bianca. I think now more than ever, people are really in tune to caring about themselves, not from just the outside. I feel like before, people could just pretend to put a face on and that they would feel like they're okay. But more and more now, we're seeing people sort of make sure they're okay on the inside in order to portray, you know, that I'm good on the inside and the outside. So, you know, we're seeing heightened increasement in therapy, people journaling, doing more physical exercise and things like that. And I feel like candles, especially scented candles, can definitely help create a relaxed state of mind to support these activities. And that by focusing on these scents of the candles or diffusers, as it may be, it allows you to take your mind from potentially all the overthinking or the hustle and bustle, you know, living in London. There's a lot going on all the time. So focusing on a scent really allows you to help relax the mind and tune in to how you're feeling. And also scents, you know, they carry a lot of nostalgia for different people. So different people have different associations with different fragrances. They have memories. So, for example, like our black cherry, I often hear, oh, that smells like a sweet that I had in my childhood, or that smells like a lip balm I used to have as a child. And then like some of the other scents will smell like, oh, that smells like my mum's perfume, or like my granddad's house by the fireplace. And it takes them to a really, you know, in your infancy, you know, where you had nothing to worry about. So I think scents associating them with different things, as well as helping you relax, will help create that general sustainable wellness.
Smell is such an important sense. And for me, as part of kind of my wind down in the evening, I like to sort of tidy up my space and put on like ambient lighting and then light a candle. And I feel like it's something that I do to bring myself back to center after a really busy day, after a load of work, after all the things that can distract you from home, if that makes sense. And for me, that's how I look after myself.
You're home after a long day and just walking into great smell. There's nothing worse coming home to like a bad smelling home, but like walking in, you just forget about the day you had. You're like, oh, what's that smell? And then you realize it's your own home, which is a great feeling.
You've mentioned your candles and diffusers. And I think with sustainability becoming such a focal point, I want to kind of discuss how candles factor into the broader conversation of sustainable wellness, especially within the beauty industry. Because I think when you look at a lot of the Christmas gift sets that have been out, a lot of them do include a candle now. So you'll see like a sleep mask, a face balm, maybe a candle or something to make it more of an experience. So can you share your insights on how your candles specifically align with the sustainable practices in promoting wellness or self-care?
Yeah, so all of our candles are made from soy wax. And before I started making candles, I wasn't really aware that there were so many different types of waxes that you can choose from. And people are definitely becoming more in tune as to, you know, what they're putting inside their bodies or having around their bodies as well. So paraffin wax is one wax that often comes up in conversation as sort of a bad wax, and that you want to avoid paraffin wax as it's derived from petroleum fuel or sometimes coal. So it's essentially like, I like to describe it as having a small car engine in your living room or your bathroom, wherever you're burning your candles.
And in an enclosed space normally as well, just to
put that
in there. You're breathing that in constantly. And so many people don't realize that the wick in paraffin candles is also dipped in the paraffin wax. So you're burning it constantly.
Correct. Yeah. So a lot of candle wicks are pre-waxed, which means they've just been dipped in wax before you basically burn them. So that is something to look out for. There is a lot of sort of scientific evidence to support and not support the fact that it is harmful for you to use paraffin wax. Ultimately, I look at it as, would you rather have something that's derived from fuel, or would you rather have something that's derived from a plant? And, you know, a lot of people do ask me when I'm selling my candles, oh, you know, what are they made from? And I do say 100% soy wax. A lot of the companies that you buy from on the high street, you know, they'll sometimes contain a mixed hybrid brand of paraffin wax and soy wax. And that's because paraffin wax is a lot easier to use and it is cheaper. So that's why a lot of companies stick with paraffin wax. Especially, you know, those cheaper supermarket candles that cost, you know, £1, £2, they're not going to be the best quality candles. So where possible, I do try to avoid those ones. And just because something is cheap in all aspects of life doesn't mean it's going to be a quality or good use for your health. So I'd always urge people to become more and more aware of what candles are made from. And a lot of these candles won't say made from paraffin wax because people do avoid them. So I'd always look out for, you know, looking at the labels and the ingredients to see what it is you're actually burning as well. We try and use as many UK manufacturers as possible when it comes to our suppliers. This is obviously to reduce any environmental impact on shipping and packaging. So we only use one international supplier. The others are all based in the UK. One's actually a 15-minute drive from me. So I actually go and pick up rather than have it shipped to me. And I have an electric car, so I like to think I'm doing my bit for the environment. So it's a win-win. We also, something I need to get better at advertising, we do offer a refill service. So rather than just throwing your candle glasses away, if you stock them up, I'm more than happy to refill them for you. I have one client that's stuck with me from day one, and probably once or twice a year, she comes with me with like 12 empty candle jars. And she's like, refill them for me, please, Danielle. And I'm like, it's no problem at all. And I always love when she comes back around at that sort of anniversary stage. So I do need to get better at advertising that. Otherwise, I do urge customers to sort of reuse their glasses as like plant pots, pen holders, got one here, you can't see that, but I'm holding it up anyway, or as like a makeup brush holder as well. I think they make for really good like second uses. And the other thing, I try to offer reduced packaging as much as possible. So on our website, we either offer our candles to come in their boxes, so if you're looking to gift it, but more case than none, people are just happy with the candle being wrapped in tissue paper because they're going to use it themselves and they don't need it to be in a decorative box. So I offer that as a cheaper alternative so that it's less packaging and obviously cheaper for the wallet. And where possible as well, I will reuse the packaging that our suppliers send to us. So, you know, the peanut packaging, the little white things that are biodegradable, I'll reuse those in our send outs as well to make sure I'm not having to buy, you know, bubble wrap or excessive amounts of cardboard when I can just simply reuse it because it goes in the bin anyway. And the last thing I'll probably mention is our small tins for traveling. So, you know, people are wanting to take their fragrances on holiday, or if they're doing a staycation here in the UK, having small little travel tins that are light and, you know, portable, they can then take their favorite smells away from them. So it's like home away from home, I like to describe it as.
I love the fact that so much of what you do is factored around A, making it cost effective for the customer and being able to achieve and access a luxury level product at a more affordable price, but also thinking about things like the route to market and your delivery and the carbon footprint associated with it, as well as then the sustainability side of the fact that it is soy-based, the fact that it is glass, that it is refillable, and all these things working together. And it's lovely to hear that. There's so much innovation going on in this space as well. And candles are no longer just decorative. I think so many people just will buy themselves a really expensive candle and never light it. I used to be that person. Candles, as I was saying, aren't just decorative anymore. And they're becoming really synonymous with wellness and those rituals that we all have, that, like I was saying. How do you see the design and functionality of them, and even diffusers, evolving to enhance the wellness experience for consumers? And what innovations have you introduced to address this shift?
I wouldn't necessarily call it an innovation per se, but one collection that's worked really well for us is our affirmation collection. So not only have you got positivity coming from the smell of the candle and the relaxation associated with it, but you've also got a positive message on the candle itself to, you know, remind yourself that you're rich. And that doesn't have to be monetarily rich. It can be rich in happiness, rich in love. We've also got the I Am Energized candle, which is rhubarb and plum. So whenever you're feeling a bit tired or you need like a wake up call in the morning, it is delicious. And then there's I Am Strong as well. So for days where you may not have had such a great day or you need some strength, then that's a really bold scent to go for as well. And the other thing would be our candle subscription service as well. So, you know, when you have a subscription and sometimes you forget about it, it's a nice treat to have in the post. Like you can do it every month or every other month, depending on the scheduling you want to go for. But you get a surprise scent through the mail every single month. You don't get to choose. So I like to think it's a way to introduce you to new scents that you never may have thought about in the past. And it's just a nice little pick-me-up that you sort of forget about as a small direct debit for like £15. It's like a nice treat in the post. So we're trying to think about innovation that way. And hopefully we'll be introducing some more sort of molded candles in the future too, so that look aesthetically pleasing, but also have a scent to them as well. Because I know a lot of people will be like, oh, it looks great, but does it have a smell? And people are addicted to smells. If it doesn't smell, they don't want it, unless it's a pillar candle, which, you know, just goes on the center of a dinner piece. But I think scent and developing scents that have different associations or different feelings associated with them is really important. So we're always looking on fragrance development and innovation as well.
Thanks, Danielle. It's sort of safe to say that we're facing some really big challenges. Climate change and health issues like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, the list goes on. Surprisingly, part of the problem lies in the way that we eat. Well, I should say unsurprisingly. And especially when it comes to kind of chowing down on high calorie, carbon intensive and carb intensive foods. But here's the interesting bit. Lots of studies show how if we shift from meat heavy diets to more plant-based ones, we're not just helping the planet, we're doing wonders for our own health. And I think it's a win-win that more of us actually need to adopt into our daily lives. Now, I want to touch a little bit on the kind of concept that I'm seeing popping up called behavioral eco-wellness. And it's basically all about the things that we do, like what we eat and how they affect both our health and the environment. And we're only sort of just scratching the surface of understanding this. And we need to make smart ways to help people make healthier and more sustainable food choices. And to do that, we kind of just have to tweak our ways of figuring out what works and what doesn't. And hey, every community is completely unique. So for scientists and locals to swap stories of successes shouldn't be too difficult, but it's about how you can adapt it within your life and your society. Dietary eco-wellness is sort of looking at how our food is produced, how it's bought, cooked, eaten. We're not just talking about it, we're shaping a roadmap. And that roadmap leads towards a more healthier, sustainable future and transitioning towards plant-based diets. And I never try to say to anybody that I'm plant-based because I'm not, but I do eat meat, but I have significantly reduced the amount of meat that I eat. Moving towards those sort of more plant-based diets, which is how people used to eat back in the sort of mid to late 1900s, will bring a whole host of environmental benefits, including a reduced strain on land and water resources, less pollution, fewer nitrogen and carbon-based greenhouse gas emissions as well. So speaking to our second guest for today is Dr. Tivi Maratapu, who is the UK's first dual-qualified consultant dermatologist and nutritionist. And Dr. Tivi believes in taking a holistic approach for looking after our skin. Her incredible book, Skin Food, is out now and you should definitely get it. Dr. Tivi, thank you so much for joining me. You're the UK's first dual qualified consultant dermatologist and nutritionist, and you believe in taking a really holistic approach to looking after our skin. So I've got some really deep questions for you this morning, but I'd love to know a little bit more. So can you share your insights into the connection between our nutrition and skin health and how adopting a more holistic approach has influenced your practice?
Thank you so much, Bianca. I'm excited to be here and get to chat to you today. Yes, so my interest really is the role of nutrition and lifestyle and how that influences the health of our skin. And I got interested in this area because I felt like there was something missing with the way I was looking after people's skin. There's amazing skincare available. We are taught from day one, you need to use a skincare routine, you need to use SPF, and all of that still holds true. But sometimes there's a piece of the puzzle that plays a role as well. For example, stress, for example, what you're eating. And it was a conversation I was having more and more in the clinic. People would say, well, my skin's good this week, but last week I went out for dinner and afterwards I ended up getting more redness or more spots or an eczema flare up. And so it made me question whether we were paying enough attention to the role of diet and lifestyle in the health of our skin. And that led me to train in nutrition and, of course, to write my book, Skin Food. And I just really hope that it helps people to take a more wider look at how we look after the health of our skin.
It's really strange that you say that because that's something that I struggle with. So in your work, you sort of emphasize the importance of considering both internal and external factors for, I guess, optimal skincare. How do environmental factors play a role in skin health, and what steps can individuals take to protect their skin in our ever-changing environment?
So major factors that influence the health of our skin, the most obvious one from the environment is the sun. And obviously we all know about using sun cream regularly and high factor. And the other aspect of the environment is environmental pollution. And we know that environmental pollution can accelerate skin aging and also pigmentation of the skin. So how do we protect ourselves? Well, we could do it from the inside and the outside. On the outside, we're going to use sunscreen. And we're going to use antioxidants like vitamin C, which really do protect from those environmental free radicals that can accelerate skin aging and give that sort of dull appearance to the skin. But from the inside, we also need to be having enough vitamin C in our diet. We need to have lots of brightly coloured fruits and vegetables, and we need foods that are rich in antioxidants. Because if you think about the skin is several layers deep. Most skincare products work on the outer layers, but what's protecting those inner layers, the deeper layers of your skin, from aging? Your vitamin C product may not get to where your collagen sits deeper in the skin, but your diet is so important in supplying that deeper layer of the skin with all the nutrients that it needs for health. So that's why I always say, look at both sides. Think about skincare and your diet as well.
Just as a sort of side question, I guess, with regards to the vitamins and minerals, can you suggest certain foods that correspond to like vitamin A, B, C, D, E? Maybe just to give our listeners a little few points.
Yeah, of course. So vitamin A, you're going to get in yellow fruits and vegetables like sweet potatoes, yellow peppers. Vitamin C is so abundant in lots of brightly coloured fruits and vegetables. It's not just oranges, peppers, actually. Red peppers have got more vitamin C. And you need vitamin C in your diet to help absorb iron. And as women, we can run really low on iron, because we, you know, menstruate, and that is a big source of iron loss. And when you don't have enough iron, you feel dreadful. You feel tired. You might have dry hair. You might notice increased hair shedding. And you get your iron from the most abundant sources is meat, but you can also get it from leafy green vegetables as well. But you need the vitamin C and the iron together to really maximize how much you're absorbing. And B vitamins, actually, you'll find a lot of those in whole grains, so oats, brown rice, but also nuts and seeds as well.
I didn't realise that red peppers had more vitamin C than oranges, because everybody, you see that on most skincare products, you see contains vitamin C, and then the marketing's always like loads of oranges or citrus in the background.
Yeah, exactly. And they even make it orange, right? They even make the serum orange as well to kind of get that vitamin C into your head. But yeah, red peppers are an excellent source. So you don't need to be sitting there eating loads and loads of oranges all day. You can actually have vitamin C from lots of different brightly coloured fruits and vegetables.
I expect the next marketing campaign that I see for a big beauty product to have red peppers on it now. So being at sort of the intersection where you are of dermatology and nutrition, what specific dietary recommendations do you often find beneficial for improving skin conditions? And are there any common misconceptions about the link between diet and skin health that you've ever encountered in your data?
So one of the biggest misconceptions that I see in people who have skin conditions, eczema, rosacea, acne, is that the more foods you cut out, the better the chance you have of clearing your skin. So I see people who have cut out dairy, gluten, caffeine, sugar, alcohol, then they start going towards more certain fruits and vegetables that they want to cut out. And in the end, they come and see me and they're hardly eating anything. And they can run into the problem of being deficient in nutrients as a result. And I think for skin health, you really need a balanced diet. There will be specific triggers for different skin conditions, and that is really, really individual. So, you know, one person might react to something, the other one, it might be something completely different. So I think people trying to do one thing and cut out lots of different foods to clear their skin is a big problem I see, that I really try and warn people against doing that. In terms of what is really good for skin health, just a really good balanced diet. So you need, and I call it glow in my book, you need the greens, so like colourful food, lots of fruit and veg. You need some lean protein, and lean protein could be chickpeas, it could be chicken, whatever you like. You need oils, so you need healthy oils for skin health would be omega-3, and you can get that from oily fish, nuts and seeds. And finally, something that people keep trying to cut out is whole grains. So you need those whole grains because they really help to support your gut microbiome, and your gut and your skin also have a link between them as well. So I think a balanced diet is great for skin health. Cutting lots of foods out of your diet can lead to eating disorders, restricting eating, and it may not give you the results that you want for your skin either.
Could you just explain what a microbiome is for anybody who doesn't understand? I know that it's a really trending topic and a terminology at the moment, but I know there's still a lot of people that don't quite understand what the microbiome is.
I mean, it seems like it's just having a moment, isn't it? The gut microbiome. So since the beginning of time, we've had trillions of bugs that live in our gut, and we don't really think about them that much, but they weigh about 2 kilos. So 2 kilos of your body weight is bugs living in your gut. Isn't that amazing? So they sit there.
You shocked me with that. You can see my face. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's good to know. I'm gonna just reduce my weight by 2 kilos now, because I'll be thinking.
So all of these little bugs sit there, and we never really thought much about them, but they're so important for our health because they help to metabolize the food that we're eating, help us to absorb nutrients from our food, and they can even help to lower inflammation and regulate your immune system. So if you've been run down, if you've been sick, it's important to support your gut, really to help support the immune system that's been busy fighting off, say, an infection or an autoimmune condition. So gut health really is at the center of many different diseases, from even mental health to arthritis, all different things we now understand could be related to the health of the bacteria in our gut.
So in the 90s and early 2000s, when everybody was talking about like Yakult and all these things, yes, and how to help with your gut health, so what would be, I guess, the benefit of having something like that over having a more robust diet that incorporates all of the different pieces of that glow recipe that you mentioned?
So it's interesting, isn't it? I remember those as well being on the shelf and being so popular, and there is some certainly science behind them. What I would say is some of those drinks can be really pricey, and they can also have quite a bit of sugar in them. And the sugar isn't necessarily a good food for your gut bacteria. So what those sorts of things are doing is introducing new bacteria into your gut and helping to improve the number of organisms that you have, because we want lots of the good ones. So that's what those little drinks do. They put in a bit more of the good bacteria. You can support your gut bacteria in many other ways that have other health benefits. So gut bacteria love fiber and they love fruits and vegetables. So they need that to really thrive. So increasing your fruit and vegetable and fiber intake supports how your gut bacteria proliferate and the health of them. So you get more of the good ones. The other thing that seems to benefit good bacteria is a bit of fasting. So having a little bit of gap between waking up and eating your first meal and a gap between your last meal and going to dinner, that seems to help the growth of those good bacteria as well. So there are lots of things that you could do that don't involve taking a supplement for your gut health. And also, of course, there are all those, you know, probiotic foods like kefir and sauerkraut and kombucha, all of those things. Again, they're helping to introduce good bacteria.
My mum used to make her own kefir. It wasn't until I was at university and having it all the time, and I had a little vat in my bedroom and I would just keep producing and topping it up, that I thought, oh my gosh, my energy levels are through the roof. My skin is glowing. My hair was the best it has ever been. 15 years down the line, it's not looking like that anymore. But having all these things, and it makes me always go back to those moments where it's just making those little tweaks in life that can really, really benefit your gut health, your physical health, your mental health, your energy, all of these things, just tiny little tweaks. And what was the other one that you mentioned? Sauerkraut.
Yes.
My friends laugh at me. I am the queen of a pickle. I love a
pickle.
Love a pickle,
yeah.
I will always continue to be the queen of sauerkraut, kimchi, any of those kinds of things. So hopefully
that's so good. Yeah, that's so good. And how ahead of the game was your mum? And I have to say, there is so much ancient wisdom that we kind of, in modern society, we think, oh, why did they used to do that? I mean, that's mad. And now we're going back to those things. Like my granny used to meditate every day, maybe 3 times a day. I would think it was so weird. I was like, what is she doing? Like, why does she, like, she might as well have a nap. But actually, you know, now we know how good that is for our health. In the same way your mum making that, she knew that that was positive for your health. The science wasn't there while why these things were beneficial, but they are so important. And now you go on social media and everyone's making kefir and you're like, well, my mum was doing that back in the day.
It does make me laugh sometimes where I see these TikTokers jump up and be like, oh, I just invented this amazing thing. I'm like, these are thousands of years. My mum was an alternative practitioner, so I grew up with a lot of things ahead of the game in my household. It used to make me feel really awkward when I was younger. I was like, why am I being forced to do this? But now looking back, hindsight is a wonderful thing. That's what
you know, health is everything, isn't it? So investing in your health is so important.
It really, really is. Moving on, as a pioneer in the dual fields of dermatology and nutrition, how do you see the beauty and wellness industries sort of intertwining with dietary choices? Could you elaborate on some of the impact that of specific foods on both the external appearance and the overall well-being? And how is that sort of connection shaping the evolving narrative in beauty and wellness?
Well, that's such a great question, because I've been kind of watching over the years and I've noticed that food has become more of an ingredient in our skincare as well. You were saying it earlier, the vitamin C and the oranges, but it's really exploded. So you have like blueberry cleansers full of antioxidants. You have chia in some of your skincare products. Green tea has been around in skincare products for a very long time. And there are even brands which label their skincare products after food, like superfood and things like that. And so I think in the minds of the beauty industry, the role of food is really coming to the fore, and I think it's only going to grow. And I've been doing some events recently from various skincare brands, and they've wanted menus, you know, for people who are coming. They want like, oh, can you design a smoothie, or can you help us with our menu so that it's a really glow giving menu. So I think this connection is only going to grow, and I think it reflects what people feel as well. For example, if you go away for a retreat or something like that and you come back and everyone says, oh, your skin's glowing, what did you do? And I think all of those sorts of experiences help to cement that relationship between how you feel, how you look, and how you take care of yourself as well.
You're right. I'm seeing so many brands, and I'm speaking to so many wonderful, sustainable, clean, vegan beauty brands this season. And a lot of them are moving down that sort of route of incorporating more food and fruit and vegetables into their products to help give people that glow. And they're pulling out the best parts of these different fruits and veg and seeing how it works with the skin. There's one brand that I think we'll be speaking to called The Glossary, and their founder just started it as a small thing at home, and it's growing so quickly. And it's her tomato based tonic.
That's so interesting. Well, because tomatoes have lycopene in them, which is a really powerful antioxidant. So that's really interesting. So I think it's great. I think that's super interesting. One thing I will say is sometimes I get people come and see me in clinic and they're really disappointed because they say, look, I have a great diet, and I have patients who are nutritionists and some of them who are dietitians. And I think we always need to remember food isn't the cure for all skin problems. There's genes involved. There's hormones involved. There's so many other things that will lead you to having, say, breakouts or redness. And sometimes, you know, you can have the most wonderful textbook diet and you may still have skin problems. And I think sometimes people feel really bad about that, but that's the sort of thing I see all the time in the clinic.
I can imagine. And it's a discussion that I keep having with friends recently that, I mean, we're all of the age group where everybody's starting to have children, and we're noticing more and more of these kids are being born with quite nasty allergies to things. And they keep saying, oh, but I ate really well during my pregnancy, or I did this and I did that. And I was like, I said to a friend, I was like, but you were really stressed, or your mum's allergic to this, or so-and-so's allergic to that. And I always say to them, like, genes do play a factor in these things. This is a constant conversation that I'm having with friends, because they're just seeing that no matter what they eat, either they're having an issue and then they're thinking about it and getting themselves to a point where they're healthy enough to then have a baby. There's so many little things, especially with women, that we have to think about.
Yes, hormone health is massive, isn't it? You know, and I think, you know, the role of diet is super important in looking after hormonal health in many stages of life. But, you know, sometimes you do need additional help. You need maybe think about hormone replacement, or there are other hormonal treatments available that might help you. So I think you've got to think of everything together as pieces of a puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to our last question. So why do you believe that it's crucial for individuals to understand that connection of what they put in their bodies, environmental factors, and the health of their skin? Are you able to share any success stories or transformative experiences from your practice that highlights the significance of this holistic perspective?
So I think people often look for quick fixes with their skin. They want to reach immediately for something. Go and ask a friend, what skincare product should I use? I've got this. And they see their skin on the outside and they think the solution must come from the outside as well. And during COVID, we all did funny things with our diet. We're not eating as we normally did. We may have gone either way on the spectrum. And I had a really lovely lady come and see me, and she was really unhappy with her skin. She had had massive breakouts during COVID. And I asked her, how has your lifestyle changed? And she said, look, I'm just in front of the desk all day and I am miserable. I hate it. And I said, well, what are your snacks and what do you eat throughout the day? Think about a diet. She said, well, you know what? To be honest, I hate it so much. I just have a pack of Haribos next to my desk. You know, that just keeps me going because I just don't have the energy. And so, you know, we all want a pack of sweets now and again. It's not the worst thing in the world. But if you're having that every day and you're having that along with, you know, ordering a lot of takeaways and not eating the most nutritious, balanced diet, sometimes you can run into trouble. And this particular patient had polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is a hormonal imbalance where lots of refined sugar can affect the health of your hormones, and it may play a role in your skin health as well. And just making a few tweaks to her diet, I gave her a prescription. She lost it. And she came back and was much better. And I was like, oh, was it the cream that helped you? She goes, no. The only thing I changed was my diet and I started exercising. So, you know, she was so happy with that. And really, those tools, you take with you those tools for life. You may stop using a cream in a couple of weeks, in a couple of months. But, you know, when you're taking care of your health, that is something that will help you throughout your whole life and not just for your skin health.
Now, thank you so much to Dr. Tibby and to Danielle Stigman for joining me today. You can listen back to previous episodes on all good podcast platforms and head to www.sustainablyinfluenced.com for more news in the sustainability world, for more shopping, and to join our newsletter as well. This season of Sustainably Influenced was produced by Content is Queen, sound editor Amber Miller, and presented by Bianca Foley.